In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Okay, we're rolling.
We're rolling.
We're rolling. Welcome. Hello. Welcome to 10 Minutes Later. Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast that is going to have a special rant from the producer momentarily. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 93.
93.
Our Armageddon pregame show.
Yes, yes, yes. The day before the end of the world, ladies and gentlemen.
The end times.
Yes. The producer has some shit to say, though. Come over here. You got to get close
get
enough or loud
closer.
Enough.
They can probably hear fine.
Okay.
I don't care. I married you. I'm fine.
William didn't. So I just got back from the gym.
The producer just got back from the gym. Good job.
Woo!
Just do it!
Exactly. And we joined the gym, maybe 6 weeks ago?
Late October.
So maybe I'm not a qualified expert to speak to this.
All right.
But I went 2 weeks ago to the class on Thursday night that is titled Yoga for Relaxation.
Sounds good.
People, there were some air quotes there. And it was good. Like, I felt taller, I felt relaxed, like, I felt, you know, whatever. But the guy that taught it that time said that he doesn't normally teach that class. He normally teaches a Saturday class. And so if you were here for whatever this girl's name is, she would be back next week.
Okay.
This week I go, and there's a girl there. I'm assuming it's the normal girl.
All right. The actual relaxation yoga teacher.
Again. Maybe not qualified, but I feel deep in my heart that if you're teaching a class called Yoga for Relaxation, fucking headstands should not be part of it.
God, headstands!
I'm just saying. It was not so good. I'm still, like, all my muscles are just, like, everything is shaking a little bit. They're like, what did you do to me?
I even feel with headstands, there's almost, like, an element of fear. Like, forget physical relaxation. That would just make me tense emotionally.
Well, and to be fair, to her credit, it's not like she's like, okay, now everybody do a headstand. Like, you know, it's kind of like a thing.
You work up to it.
And I never even really tried it. But even, like, the weird crouchy thing is, like,
Anytime a lot of pressure is on your head and neck.
Well, no. I didn't even get my head on the ground. But, like, my thighs are on my arm, it was fucked up.
I was gonna say, you're talking about your thighs while holding your tricep, so I'm very
confused.
Because
that's where they were. They were up. I can't show
my
you.
Goodness.
It would be totally embarrassing. Also, the Hatters can't see it. So, Hatters, you just have to imagine the producer twisted into a pretzel and Merry Christmas to you. That's what I got you.
And it was so relaxing.
Yeah,
so much.
I'm so relaxed now. All right, that's all I wanted to say.
Hit the showers.
So, ready for the end of times now.
Yes.
Not doing that shit again.
One of the signs of the apocalypse. Yoga for relaxation, not that relaxing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One of the signs.
Now,
you were saying something about this last time.
Yes, a week ago.
Yeah, a week ago. What were you saying?
10 minutes ago. Well, my niece's birthday is today.
Yes.
Or tomorrow, when the world ends.
Yes.
She's 8.
Yeah.
Coincidence? Yes. Yes, it is. Absolutely coincidence.
But you were talking about different ways that it's going to happen or something, or people were talking about...
The producer theorized, actually, that... Because apparently it happens at, like, 5:21 a.m.
Okay.
I'm not sure which time zone, though. Is this an issue?
That's Central. I had to convert it from Greenwich Mean Time.
Oh, she translated it. All right.
Yes, you are thorough.
Right.
She is. She is the producer.
Right, relax.
She gave us the central. She gave us the central time zone time.
The central time zone time, which is where we are, people. So you check your local listings for the apocalypse.
Central Standard Time. Yes. 5:21,
I believe. 5:21
a.m.
So we will all be asleep. I will almost be awake, but not quite. And so she was saying how convenient, because we won't know. We'll be in our sleep.
Yeah.
And I was saying, that may not be how the apocalypse works. Like, frequently, there's, like, earthquakes and raining fire and, you know, terrible pestilence and tidal. Like, we would probably wake up for that.
Well, you know, I called it the Armageddon pregame show, but let's be honest. We don't, you know, it's not much of a pregame show if we don't know what's going to happen.
No,
exactly.
No. Oh, but I've seen lots of pregame shows like that.
But there are a lot of possibilities we can talk about, yes. A lot of things we can say probably won't happen. For example, probably not going to be an asteroid impact, because we
would see that coming.
Probably see that coming.
As it were.
Yeah. Now.
Oh, wait, but see, now I can't relax. Here's my point, because you didn't tell my joke. Okay. My joke was actually
I told it in the last episode. Oh, okay. Stopped me, and I'm trying to, about how it's like a television set. No, what's your joke then?
I said that it won't be, it's not the apocalypse, it's the end of time.
Yes.
So it will be, there won't be an asteroid or, you know, any disaster, there won't be, because Tony's like, we'll wake up. I'm like, no, because you'll just be like sleeping, and then you'll cease to exist.
Like a TV set being turned off, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, you did say that last
time. That's how you said it, yes.
This time you said it, I thought you meant like a set where you do the acting, and I was like, what?
Yes, a TV, oh God. Relax.
She asked me to do a fucking headstand.
And your brains spilled out.
And they were all over the mat, and the spray they give you at the gym, it doesn't clean that shit.
It really does not. Alright, yes. So,
well,
the
but
apocalypse
that's...
will be like a television soundstage being turned off.
No, that's one possibility.
It's
of
really
course.
Not. That makes absolutely no sense.
No. Look, okay. Let's start at the beginning of this whole Mayan thing. For one, it really might very much is a situation where, well, they ran out of room. I mean, it just ended.
They had to stop somewhere. They were not going to make the infinity calendar. Except they did, because you can flip it over.
Beyond that, there are some people who think there's evidence to suggest that they actually did think something would happen. But the something that was going to happen was, you know, actually a good thing. You know, there would be an age of enlightenment or whatever.
The point is, there is arguably some sort of planetary enlightenment, or not alignment. But that doesn't necessarily herald the end of time.
But since people are saying this, we might as well go with it and have fun with it.
All right.
So, to begin with, from the Mayan perspective, probably nothing was going to happen. It was just how the calendar ended. Perhaps there's some evidence to suggest they thought that this would be a great age of enlightenment or whatever. But, of course, that kind of thing has been predicted before, and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah.
The next thing after that, someone somewhere who originated all this, I believe one of the first claims that was made was that the poles were going to flip over.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an interesting one, because for the life of me, I can't figure out myself, nor can I find any scientist who can tell who can figure out why that would be so bad. Your compass
compasses
might get screwed up.
Yeah,
your compass is going to get screwed up, but there's no reason to think that it would be accompanied by great tectonic activity or our electronics suddenly not working. So that doesn't make any sense.
Okay, here's the thing, I believe. The Mayans... Okay, either the Mayans weren't into this at all, in which case, we really shouldn't be paying any attention. They didn't think it was going to happen. We should not think it's going to happen based on thinking they thought it was going to happen
if they didn't. Right.
So,
yeah.
Obviously, that case. So, but if we assume they think anything is happening now,
yeah.
They made a calendar for themselves that went to 2012. Clearly, they, as a people, did not have a good grasp on future events or they would have made a smaller calendar. Yeah. Because they would have realized that they weren't going to need it.
No, they weren't going to be around very much longer.
Right. So...
No, that's right, that's right.
I feel like they're bad judges.
Perhaps.
Which maybe means if they didn't think anything was going to happen, we should be worried.
Okay. Let's cover a few other possibilities, though, here.
All right, all
right. Let's go right to something caused by human agents, like... nuclear war or something.
All
like
right,
that.
All right.
Also, not terribly likely.
Unless the only, you know what? The only reason that would happen is if somebody with the capability to do some sort of nuclear strike and set the whole thing off was really panicked about the Mayan apocalypse, and so they did it.
Right. Right.
So
right.
Really, shut up or it'll happen. Yeah. Like basically, is what we're saying.
There are two types of fairly devastating natural disasters that it's not the kind of thing you can see coming. Although one, there might be some indications of it beforehand, but not like, say, an asteroid coming toward the Earth. That its probability is probably really difficult to... Its probability is difficult to absolutely calculate. That could possibly happen. One of them is a supervolcano erupting.
This would now cause... I just have a picture of a volcano with a cape and a big S on the front.
A big V, maybe.
Yeah.
But and if the right one erupted, it would be very much like an asteroid hitting the Earth, and there'd be like, you know, the soot would be in the atmosphere,
and it would make
plants die. That could actually be a very devastating thing.
So don't do that.
No, but and that's the one where there could be some seismic activity ahead of something like that, so we'd have a little bit of warning, but not likely anybody would be able to interpret it correctly before. And what could we do about it? Nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is something that could happen that would might kill everybody on the planet, and there's nothing we could do about it, which is kind of scary when you think about it. But anyway, another thing that is sort of interesting, and this is something that recently the intelligence community or the intelligence some intelligence group releases this report called Global Trends. Have you heard of it?
It's on Twitter, and it's whichever hashtags get used most often.
No, no, no. They talk about where they think the world's going to be in a certain number of years, and in this case, the report was in 2030. And they've published a few of these, and they always go 25 years or whatever into the future. And I try to keep up on them. I can never remember the agency that publishes them, but I always get some kind of information when they're published. I just read this one recently. And this was one of the things that they're actually concerned about it happening. It's also something that can happen by artificial means. If a nuclear device is detonated in the atmosphere above North America, this could happen. But the thing they're really concerned about causing it is a solar flare. If we get a big enough solar flare, it could cause an electromagnetic pulse or an EMP that can take out the electric grid and electric devices all over our hemisphere, and to an extent where the projections for when everything could get fixed could be a year. Now, that might not sound like very long, but now think about this for a second. Anything that's not in what's called a Faraday cage or a box that's got metal around it and insulation on the inside so that everything is protected from the EMP, anything that's not in one of these Faraday cages that has any computer components whatsoever, including your automobile, any electronics in your house, it's going to be fried. Okay, you probably won't be able to fix it. So your car will be worthless. Your television will be worthless. Your telephone will be worthless. Your computer will be worthless.
Fridge.
Fridge. And you won't be able to get any of these things fixed because, you know, all the stores, all their electronics are worthless or fried. And so no electronics, no electricity for a year. And you know, nobody's going to wait around a year for everything to get fixed. You know, people are going to have to do something else.
Yes.
They're going to have to adapt. They're going to have to...
make a really bad NBC show.
Well, maybe, exactly. Or do something else for a job, do something else for a living, do something else to get food. There's a good chance that the organization required to fix the whole thing will never even coalesce, so it'll never get fixed. So this is something that could happen. I mean, it really could happen, and it really could change the world in a dramatic way. And of course, many people could lose their lives. People in the hospital could die immediately because they need the electricity and the devices to survive, or in the middle of surgery. Planes could crash and those people would die. But a lot of people could die afterwards because they can't figure out how to survive, or they're too old, or you know, it happens before winter and they freeze to death, or it happens before summer and they die of heat exhaustion, whatever. And so this is something that a lot of our government is actually concerned about happening, and it could happen anytime.
XKCD recently had a comic about Faraday cage fighting. It was pretty nice.
There, if anyone is interested in some entertainment around this theme, there's a reality show called Doomsday Preppers. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes. The producer does not like this show because she's like, it's bullshit because these guys are posers, because real Doomsday Preppers would not be on TV showing you their shit. They're like, you don't get to see what I have. No, you don't get to see where I live. No. So these are wannabe Doomsday Preppers. Yeah. Also, people who are interested in this can watch an old James Cameron Fox television show called Dark Angel, where this is the thing that happened. There was a EMP burst and all electronics stopped working, and so everybody's fucked. And then hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue. And actually, there's a lot of cool post-apocalyptic stuff you can watch if you're interested in having a theme for your pre-Armageddon party or whatever. You know, of all the things you can think of that are prop or that could happen, you know, there are some things that actually could happen that would be really devastating to our so-called civilization. But the EMP, of course, wouldn't be as devastating to life on the planet as the supervolcano.
Australians would laugh at us.
Well, I think that if it were to happen now, people could adapt a lot better than a lot of people think. But, you know, 30 years from now, I'm not so sure. People are going to be so reliant on these things, and you're not even going to have people who remember living a life before electricity was so very important. I mean, my dad can remember. I mean, he always had electricity, but, you know, if the electricity went out, it didn't matter. I mean, you know, they could survive.
I kind of feel like people who are still around who talk about not having electricity and the history books that are lying.
Well, as I said, kind of feel like he doesn't not have electricity. It's just it wasn't all that reliable. I mean, sometimes
I kind of feel like there was always electricity, and these people are lying.
No,
I kind of feel like even in the caveman days,
there was electricity.
They had a television,
the caveman days,
and a microwave, and that kind of stuff.
Well. You know, the biggest problem with the Doomsday Preppers, though, is that
they're universally ugly as hell.
Most of the time,
they all seem to be prepping for very specific apocalypses.
Well, that's part of it, but also everyone seems to think, in at least the way they make it look, that in that community, and maybe even the people who make the show, that when it happens, there's not going to be any cooperation. You know, there's not going to be, no one's going to band together or anything like that, which I think is fairly unrealistic. I mean, yeah, there are some people that are going to get desperate and loot and whatever, but it's not, there is another side to human nature. And even the people who are really selfish or might immediately think to themselves, gosh, maybe I need help. And maybe other people who want to survive are going to need help, and we can get together and band together. This is another problem I had with there was another reality show from someone called The Colony.
A couple
seasons of that. And in the show, you know, they would often have someone, a group of people approach the colony, and they were all paranoid, and they locked the place up, and they had weapons, and they said, oh, tell us who you are, and what do you want? And, you know, and they were really paranoid. And they weren't taking into account that for the most part, when you add people to your community, it's a benefit, not a hindrance. On the surface, you think, and a lot of these Doomsday Preppers think this way, that you only have so many resources, so you don't want more people than you've got. But depending on what the apocalypse is, depending on what's happened, more people also is more labor, more creative input, more whatever. And if you do it
and
right...
And eventually more meat, let's be honest.
Well, anyway, the point is, in a lot of situations, more people isn't worse. More people is actually better. And I have a feeling that in the actual situation, a lot of people would remember this or discover this. And it's kind of an artificial thing to show people in these reality shows panicking whenever someone shows up, as if that's the only response you can make. And nobody in the group is saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe someone has some skills that we could use, or, hey, this is six other people who can help us forage, you know. And usually people bring to a group more than, you know, it's a situation where the productivity is greater than the sum of its parts. So you don't have to sit there and think that, well, this person equals this much food and whatever, and so we can't afford to have these people. It doesn't work like that.
And is this positive attitude of yours that is why you will be one of the first to die in the apocalypse? And if I am lucky enough that there really are more people out there like you, I will become a king of my own little kingdom of dirt and people who I have manipulated into worshiping me nigh unlike a god.
I find that very unlikely.
I could totally do that. I could start my own cult.
You're very confident about yourself.
I am quite confident I could start a cult if I wanted to.
Well, maybe you could. I don't know. Here's what I do know.
I'm lazy enough that I'm not going to bother.
I know there's a place I can go where I would be, and the people I take with me would be safe. And one of the first things I would do once we got to that place is I would find some mode of conveyance, some way to travel, and I would find people around that place and see how they're doing and make sure we're all kind of on the same page for surviving. There's no way I would be isolationist, because that's ridiculous and stupid. But that's what a lot of these preppers think they're going to do. But that's not the way to survive. You need everybody around you to know, hey, we're in this together, and maybe we can help each other out. And if you do that, then it's going to be okay, because people can figure things out, especially if they don't sit there and try to do it all by themselves.
You're going to be killed so early. I never thought I would say this, but I might last longer than you.
No.
Not much, but...
Well, now keep in mind, where I'm talking about going is not some... the city is probably going to be a big mess, because that's the way cities are. But, you know, rural communities... I don't know. The ones I come from, these people aren't prone to panic. If they found out that all the electronics didn't work, most of them, even the young ones, would kind of shrug their shoulders and go, okay. And they'd find ways to get around it, and they'd be fine.
Well, for the rest of you, I'm going to stay here. So if the apocalypse happens, you can come visit me in Iowa City. I won't let you in. I won't share any of my resources. But you can come visit. We'll talk. It'll be nice.
There really aren't too many things that could happen that would be so devastating that it's, you know, that it's so awful that, like I said, the super volcano, that would be pretty awful.
Zombies.
No, zombies.
Zombies would suck.
Well, it would, but they're so fictional, it's not even funny. Even the most realistic zombie story is ridiculous.
They got the virus in the mountain hiding. Government.
Oh, well, yeah, we didn't even cover that stuff. Like, an epidemic that kills people.
I think that's the most likely. Well, we are stupid with our medicine. We are making all sorts of things that are resistant to all of our shit.
Well, and not just that, but there's a couple ways this could happen. It could affect us and kill a huge number of our population. And that you're right. That's another one of the things that this report talked about being afraid to happen. They were afraid that might happen. But another way it could happen is it could attack our crops. We've got monoculture with our crops, and this could cause a terrible food crisis if some disease hits the corn and or soybeans, and they're all the same organism, and so our agricultural system collapses and fails. We're going to face high food prices, famine, and of course right on the heals of famine is sickness and plague, and before you know it, you know, it's all gone to pot. So yeah, either one of those things are also possible and very scary, and could wipe us out.
Okay, I'm bored with the apocalypse now. Let's pull out the hat.
Okay.
Except my finger's stuck in this bottle. All right. Go.
It is kind of amazing the kinds of simple things that could end everything. I mean, they just could. In
yes,
one,
so amazing.
One flash.
Not at all depressing.
Mark McKibben.
Mark McKibben, heart rate number one. What did he say?
Was the bit where Tony says the only podcast Where, Who, Whatever inspired by the hosts of Top Gear introducing the Stig?
The Stig. Oh, okay, okay. Well, first of all, let me translate this question for William, who looks very perplexed. The bit he's talking about is the bit at the beginning of each episode where I say, Magic Talk Podcast, well, the only podcast, blah, blah, blah.
I know that part.
He wants to know if it was inspired by a bit they do on the show Top Gear before they, every time before they introduce their tame racing driver, the Stig. That's what they call him. Don't know what he looks like. He's in a full racing gear suit and helmet with a tinted visor. So you don't know what he looks like. Nobody knows. And they what they say, they do it like they do two or three of them each time. They say, some say he's never seen a duck. Or some say he was once the Prince of Azerbaijan from 1983 to 1987. You know, things like this. Some say he has three lungs.
And he's what?
They call him the Stig.
I know, but he's, what is he?
He's their tame racing driver.
A tame racing
driver. Yes, he's an actual, like, pro racing driver. So when they need to do tests that involve somebody who really knows what they're doing with a car to, like, race it around the track to see how fast it'll go, they don't do it because they're not that good, but they have this guy who's a pro at it.
Tame.
As, yeah, they domesticated him. Feel like you're overthinking this.
Well, I'm not overthinking it. I don't know. You're just talking about it like I have no idea what you're talking about. But he's what? Well, okay, whatever.
It's a joke. He's their mysterious guy. You don't even know who he is.
All right.
But they claim that.
So answer the question: is it inspired by that or not?
It isn't. It is not consciously inspired by that. I'm a big fan of that bit on Top Gear. I don't believe it came from there. It is more inspired, I think. Well, there's a couple of sources from it. I got greater inspiration. I used to listen to a podcast about World of Warcraft called The Instance. And at a certain point, it wasn't there at the beginning, but they developed over time. One of the hosts, at the very end, when they were like, goodbye, everybody, and like the theme music was kicking in, he would always say, now I've got to go, and it was some joke every time. Similar kind of thing. To like what I do. And that was, I think, a lot of inspiration. But I think part of what it came to is when William and I were originally talking about doing the podcast, I kind of had this thing in my head where every time I was going to claim why we did the podcast and it was going to be a different, ridiculous reason. The only one that really sticks with me is that we put this podcast together to bring a love of Kenny Loggins' music to the homeless, I think was one of them. But I had that idea, and then it sort of morphed into this. But there was no conscious copying of anybody, no. But I do love that Stig joke. And they use a lot. And my favorite is there's one where one of the hosts is going to drive a car, and you... cut to the actual driving, and it's clearly the Stig doing it and not him. But the bit is the host in question was wearing this very garish striped sweater, and in the bit the Stig is wearing that sweater, but he still has the helmet on, so you know it's not him. And later in the episode when they have to introduce him, he says, some say he has a stripy top just like mine. And I thought that was cute.
Stripy top.
But yes, thank you for your question, Mark. And no, it's not from that. But I also, like you, I'm guessing, Very much appreciate that bit. All right, next question.
It's going to be sad that no one will know anything about the Stig after tomorrow.
Yep.
All the things we'll miss.
To be fair,
well, we won't miss because we'll be gone.
I believe they had an episode where they finally unmasked the Stig. Mm. Actually, I think they've had a couple of them where they finally did, and then like the very next week they say, "Turned out that was a trick. It wasn't really him. We were fooled." So you never really know. All right, dear Timth, DMTH. This is from Craig, by the way.
Oh wow,
Craig from what are we calling it now? Outside London, is that what we're calling it, I think?
I don't know.
All right. If you had the option, would you get cybernetic implants? If yes, what? I feel like we had this one. This sounds very familiar.
I don't know. My opinion changes about this, I think, sometimes. But cybernetic implants, no.
No, not of any kind.
No.
No machine put into you.
Well, here's the thing. I've often thought that if my brain waves or my mind
could be transferred into a machine.
Yeah, I know.
We've talked about that.
I don't know about my brain. Like, it's all or nothing for me, I guess.
Holy digital.
Yeah. If that could happen, I might be up for it, but I've often rethought that and thought
any actual cybernetic maybe component that is both organic and inorganic, no, you don't go for it.
No. And again, I might change my mind about that too. I don't know. It's kind of a. There's two things at work here for me. One is, I like the idea of living really forever. I mean, I know people talk about that and they say, oh, who want to do that because you get bored, blah, 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 whatever. None of those arguments work for me. I think I can entertain myself pretty much forever.
I kind of feel the same.
I don't want to watch my friends die and all that stuff, and that would be horrible. But I think that I could get over it. And I'm not saying that to be cold, yeah, but
no,
I mean,
no, no.
I
feel like I could too. I will say this. I know enough to know my intelligence and my understanding of it is limited enough that were I to be given the option to live forever and it was a, like, this is your one chance, you will never be able to die after this point, decide now, I probably wouldn't go for it. But if I always had the option of, like, killing myself later if I got sick of it or whatever, no, I do believe. Well, here's the thing. Nobody has lived forever, so none of us know. It could turn out that after a few centuries, it really sucks.
I mean, I'm always presuming that I could shut the lights off if I ever felt like
it. Yeah, if that's the case, no, I would totally
Now, if you're saying that, I'm not sure. If you're saying, okay, from this point on, you're not going to die and there's nothing that you can possibly do to die, would you do it or not?
And I'm telling you, like it's not like you're going to keep growing old and eventually you'll be disgusting or anything like that. You'll be fine. But you will always live.
So you won't even have a choice to...
No. If you kill yourself, you immediately come back.
I guess I'm still not sure what I still feel like I would do it, but I would have pause in that
sense. Yeah, I don't think I'd do it just because I know I don't know enough to be able to make
and,
that
and call. And I know that too, but I might just think, what the heck. So that's part of it. Part of it is... like I said, but when I said before that... I don't want my loved ones to die or whatever, but I mean, I've lost my mother, and I can't stand that she's not around.
But it doesn't make you want to die.
No, it doesn't make me want to
yeah,
die.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Another part of it is I do have a fascination with that kind of, well, with artificial intelligence in particular, and with the potentials of that, and with And as an extension of that, I do have a little bit of an interest in how that technology and figuring out how to make, say, an Android would contribute to, say, my ability to continue on in a different type of body.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I realize there's a lot of things about having a physical body that makes me who I am. And, you know, I would feel like I would need some kind of assurance that being in this mechanical body wouldn't change that too much. I mean, I have to change it. And that's fine because people change. I mean, I don't have a problem with change. I just would want to feel like it was a change that...
wouldn't cause you to lose your identity.
Right, because such as it is. You know, I have a very fluid definition of identity too, but
a sense of identity even.
Yeah, because right now I feel like if you were to take my mind and put it into a machine, even if it looked exactly like me...
the overall value of the machine would go down.
Well, besides that. Okay. I think what the being that is the machine with my brain in it would experience is just having data downloaded into it. It would still not feel... It would not feel like me. It would not think that it's me. It would just think, oh, I happen to have all this information. And I would still be gone. You know, for it to be me, it might take something that you just can't even get in an artificial body like that. And if that's true for the whole body being that way, it might be true as you gradually replace parts with cybernetic bits.
Certain role-playing games have dealt with that very concept, that replacing the human body with artificial things slowly degenerates your humanity.
Now, then of course the question becomes, well, how much of you has to be replaced before that starts to happen? Does anyone believe that you can get a bionic arm and that part of your identity is taken away? Now,
original
I would argue,
Shadowrun and Cyberpunk, I believe you have a humanity, an essence score of 6, and when it goes below 1, then you're in trouble.
Okay, well, I would argue that if you replace a person's arm with a bionic arm, indeed, that's a huge change to the person's whole personality. But...
Now, wait.
Yeah, even just changing the arm.
But here's the thing. We do that now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those people would agree that say, yeah, this was a huge change in my life.
I believe that.
For me even to lose my arm. Much, well, I suppose it depends on how you define personality.
To their sense of self. I mean, to their functional life, yes, but to their sense of self.
What I'm trying to get at here, and there's probably no good word for it, is a sense of the whole person changing. And yes, their personality too. Every aspect of their life changes when they lose this part of their body. And then again, when they have it replaced with something that... people sometimes underestimate the power of how their interaction with their own body affects not just the way they live their life in terms of daily tasks, but in how they see themselves and how they see other people in... And mostly it's positive ways, because a lot of times a person finds they're capable of doing something and coping with things that they didn't think that they were capable of doing and coping with. But the question is...
So William's telling you, cut off your arm, you'll become a better person.
No.
Do it, people, now. Don't question
it. There are actually some measurable things to look at here. I mean, the thing that allows your body basically to have an influence over your personality, you know, the reason you're not just a brain that thinks and calculates, you're not just a computer, is because, you know, there's hormones and there's chemicals and there's physiological responses, and if you replace too much of that, like for example, if you replaced everything from the neck down such that the glands and things in your head didn't even do anything anymore, even though from the neck up you're a biological thing, I doubt you would have enough of that physiological stuff left to even act like a human being.
Okay, what if we're just additive? What if we aren't replacing things? What if we're just tacking on a third arm with an awesome claw at the end?
Well, again, of course, you know, I think that does change enough of you that it alters your identity a little bit. You're someone who can do something that a person who doesn't have this can't do.
You're worried about turning into Dr. Octopus.
No, I'm saying that all of these things change you. The question is, how much change are you willing to accept, and how much change has to take place before you can start wondering if there's any humanity left there? But it can go either way. You can be, well, now I'm more machine than man, or it can be now I'm a superhuman. You know, now I'm kind of beyond human. It can go both ways. But something about cybernetics, for some reason, just has never appealed to me as something that I would want to do. I can't explain it. But
I would totally do it.
Does it even depend on what it is?
Yeah, I have specific things I want.
Well, what do you want?
Yeah, I'm not just like, dude, can you take some machine and can you shove a blender in my ass? No, I mean, of course it depends on what it is.
Well, I know, but you know what I mean by that. Assuming,
I mean, this is very much a thought experiment. To be honest, if they invented something today and I had the chance, I wouldn't do it because I would know they're still working out the kinks. They still don't know the long term.
Right. But what, like, is it you want?
If we could assure me that whatever I did, like, later extra bits of me didn't fall off, or I didn't go crazy, or I didn't, you know, microwave a burrito and electrocute myself. Like, if I knew it could work the way it's supposed to. I don't know. There's a few options. I'm very fond. This was an old one, and it's funny, because this is one of those where we've almost reached the point. But in old cyberpunk things I would read and so forth, certain individuals, oddly frequently the villains, would have internal sound systems so that with thought they could essentially score their life. They would have a soundtrack and they could alter it to set their mood at the time. And I loved this idea. And we're really close to this now because you can kind of do it with an iPod walking down the street.
Okay, now we need to make a distinction here because, you know, I'm of the opinion that you can be a cyborg without having an implant. I mean, if you have a machine that you have to have with you all the time, to me, that's close enough.
Yeah.
So this question is saying specifically implants.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. And I don't like the iPod. I want something... Okay. And I think in a lot of versions, it's in the bones, the collarbone, because there's good resonance there, and so no one will hear it externally, but you can hear it.
Because that's the part of it that I find that I don't like is the implant part. You know? Like, if someone were to say, well, if you could wear an exoskeleton suit that gave you speed and strength, would you do that? Well, of course. But,
well, because you can always separate.
Yeah,
from it.
But something like implant stuff, no, I don't really like that.
And everything I'm talking about is implanted.
Okay.
I really like that idea. It's relatively shallow and cosmetic, so I mean, it's not a great one. But I've always thought that appealed. In general, thought process that like internal computer. Like if I could essentially have like the processing power
just
of like
check Wiki in your
exactly yes exactly exactly. And to an extent of that, the concept of cyber eyes, both ones that would have perfect vision, but also could see in other spectrums, and could have retinal displays.
Now, all of these things you're talking about are things I thought about too that would be cool, but I can think of all of them working without being implanted.
Yeah, but it's not as cool if they're not implanted.
See, I think they're less cool if they're implanted.
No, it's super cool. I'm going to be sitting around naked. And I can still, like, naked in an empty room, and I can still be, like, you know, reading things and stuff,
uh-huh.
Video conferencing with people and things like that. It's awesome.
Yeah, the implant thing seems overboard to me. Why get an implant when you don't have to have one to do the same thing?
Because it's cool. And again, this is only, you're right. In any real practical world experience, because the reason you don't get an implant is because it's more dangerous and there's more risk than putting on a pair of smart glasses or whatever.
Yeah, but
absolutely.
What if your bionic eyes fritz out? Then
exactly. So in a practical sense, but that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying all of this, I have to be convinced, like, the risks have to be set aside. But talking from the sense of ethics and from the sense of self-identity or whatever, I'm totally into it. I mean, hell, I still won't get LASIK. So clearly I'm not that into that kind of shit. But if you set that aside... But yeah, no, it'll all break, so it'll be terrible. I'm not nearly into the idea of artificial limbs per se, or even strength augmentation stuff so much, or weird enhancers, you know, like maybe faster or you know, increase metabolism, you know, so I can run faster or things. I don't care about any of that shit. I guess a little interest in subdermal storage. We'll have like a pocket in my arm. That'd be kind of cool. But yeah, mostly that's it.
Well, you know, I write a lot about this kind of thing. And, you know, in my novels, there's sort of a suggestion of a kind of existence of two worlds, maybe a little bit of a tension between them, where you have one world where it tries to achieve certain things through technology, and another world where you can achieve the same things through mental and spiritual discipline. And that way is harder, takes longer, but it might also be a little more potent. And some of that reflects some of my own personal beliefs, actually. And so, you know, that also contributes to me having a little bit of an aversion to the technological way. But as I said, I do have a fascination with artificial intelligence. I'm one of those people that thinks that the people who think that an artificial intelligence, one that's just like you or me, a sentient machine, is impossible. I don't see the reasoning in that. I think that it's possible, and I think that if it ever happens, that being needs to be respected like any other intelligent being and things like that. And so there's a lot of things that spin off from that interest and fascination that relate to what we're talking about in cybernetics and whatever. So I get to the edge of that, and I get some interest in it, and I wonder, gosh, would I transfer my consciousness to a machine? Could I do that? Could that even work? But
I like transferring your consciousness to a machine. But then we could friggin' unplug it.
But usually, when push comes to shove, I come down on the side of, nah, I'm probably okay with just the way I am. I mean, I you know, I don't even have mobile devices or anything. I mean, I'm.
Are we gonna sing "Free to Be You and Me" now?
No.
All right.
It's just I'm kind of I'm in this ambivalent place because, you know, I have an interest in this and an interest in this other thing, and they don't actually go together very well.
Did I ever make you listen to Tom Hanks talking about Willie Mays?
No.
Really?
Why would I want to hear Tom Hanks talk about
Willie Mays? Trust me, I'm going to make you listen to it afterward.
Why?
Because it's hilarious. Trust me. Trust me. It's good stuff. I could have sworn I don't touch them.
What?
Yeah, no, man, I haven't. Oh, God, I got to. For the rest of you, go to the Nerdist podcast and find the Tom Hanks episode. The whole thing is really great, but there's a particular bit that made me die laughing several times. Okay, if we hurry, we can get another question in.
Of course, we all know that when the cybernetic implants come, then we're going to have the apocalypse. So that was a timely question.
Like tomorrow.
Dear Hatlets, Sir Guido asks...
Oh, Sir Guido!
Movies or TV? Movies on TV.
Yeah. This is a very interesting question because I think this is a fluid issue, and I see this come up a lot. A lot of media that I consume right now seems to believe that movies are starting to suck more and TV is getting really good.
Well, if we differentiate between, you know, cinema and television and there's a lot of ways you can differentiate it. You know, one is in a public place, which is a completely different experience, and one is in a private place. But artistically, I think the biggest distinguishing factor is one tends to be episodic and serial in nature, and the other one tends not to be so much, or if it is, it's in a very limited way. And I very much prefer serialized storytelling.
I think I do too.
I've said it before on the podcast, and I mean I know that I do.
That's the same thing that why in my role-playing games, I much prefer the longer dynamic campaign, mm-hmm. rather than a bunch of short ones. Those can be quite fun.
Yeah.
And I have done those, and I will do those again. I prefer the longer ones because it gives you more time for growth, more time for dynamism, more time for complexity.
Yep.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. I do prefer that, which, you know, and again, television has always been more that way than film.
But television for a long time, and still happens sometimes, didn't really do that. What they did was little movies. Your average mystery show, your average sitcom, had your plot line, and everything at the end of the episode was pretty much exactly where it had been at the beginning.
Yeah, I suppose.
Very little change. But there were exceptions.
They've had soap operas since the very beginning, though.
And that's the thing. If you miss a week of a soap opera, you will be lost. If you miss 6 months of a soap opera, you will know exactly what's going on.
That's probably true.
But I have tried this. But it began much more in earnest in the last decade or so. Where I always, for me, the big milestone has always been Babylon 5. That Babylon 5 was originally designed as a 5-season arc worked out beforehand to go that far and exactly that far was amazing to me at the time and was unheard of to me at the time. But now it's become a thing. Lost did it. They cheated a little bit, but I mean, that was the plan. Other shows have done it. The Brits have been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that has become, in recent years, that has become much more of a thing than it used to be.
Well, maybe that's true and maybe it isn't. I mean, our experience obviously is very limited, but
yeah.
I do have to say that, you know, if, and I think I've said this before, I do prefer serialized storytelling, but I do like it to have a place it's going. I
mean, yes,
I'd like,
absolutely.
I like, if someone says this is going to be a 6-season thing, I already feel like, okay, this might be quality thing. If it's completely open-ended, it can be done, but it usually isn't very good.
It usually sucks because at that point, it's usually they won't stop until after they realize everybody hates it.
Yeah,
and by that point, right. It's become bad.
So yeah, but, I do. I would like there to be an end to it, yes. But I'd like it to last a long time and be a serialized type of thing.
And it shows up even in places that still sort of do this. My go tos, my shows that I love that I agree aren't that good: Castle, Leverage, Warehouse 13. Love all of these. Have to admit they're not great. Here's the deal: if I started watching them today in their current seasons, I think I probably would not like them, but I feel that I have grown with these characters and their relationships, and I care about them. And so I'm much more invested in what they're doing. Mm. And it means more to me. Stuff that happens there has more repercussions because I've gone through this stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me enjoy it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I probably would not enjoy it.
Yeah.
And in movies, you can do that to a degree. You can't do that as well, because at most, you got 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. Or 6 hours or so in terms of like a trilogy or something.
Yeah. So you can't grow as much. And there's a new contender in here. Video games.
Mm-hmm.
There are characters in the third Mass Effect game that have appeared in all the way since the first Mass Effect game. Some of these characters will discuss with you things they and you have gone through essentially over the run of the game. When I experienced this, I felt genuine sentiment and nostalgia for these experiences and what I perceived as my relationship with these characters.
Well, and the
genuine feelings,
yeah,
like this.
And the video games that are serialized, even though it's so far not that, you know, it's not that common for there to be more than 3 of those either.
Mm.
Since the game itself lasts several hours, it feels like every time you sit down and play for an hour or two, that it's a new episode.
You have been, well, and you have just been through much more. You could compare it to being a, you know, 50-hour movie, but it's a sheer issue of the commodity of time.
Right.
You've spent more time. And even games, you know, Mass Effect, Assassin's Creed is a great one. I don't have any control over the story in Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed's story is written in the game. I mean, I do stuff, but it's not like there's different endings or whatever. But that same story, I feel like I've been through stuff. I just finished the fourth game, and, like, the character is reminiscing over things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember back then.
Well,
we really have grown since that. That was really, I remember at the time I felt like this, and now looking back, I see it was this.
Yeah, a video game series, each game is more like a season in a TV show than it is a new installment of a film.
Yes.
And, yeah, I agree that it
pretty much is. And so it's starting to develop the same thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, I hope where we're going is where the lines start getting really blurred.
Mm-hmm.
Between film, television series, video game. Yeah, where you can't say as well. I much prefer that. And it becomes visual art, akin to stuff where you say, is this a concert, is this a play? Now we call it performance art, you know, but it's something in between.
Yeah.
I want that. Because then you can tailor it. How much do you want? How much impact of this nature? Because you can also do things in movies that you could never do in these serialized things because of the structure.
Yeah.
That you can have different types of impact.
Yeah.
Well,
that's why cinema will never, as its own thing, ever go away. I mean, it's got a place.
And largely, radio is having trouble. But by and large, everything that everybody keeps saying will go away, like books, you know, TV, things like that, music, like never does, because you incorporate them.
Well, and they have their niche. I mean, it's, and that doesn't really go away.
Because if you could make something exactly the same, you wouldn't bother because you'd already have it.
Right.
I mean, hell, plays don't go away.
No. No.
We've got everything you could possibly have to replace plays, and yet I love going to a play.
Well, and a lot of people do. It's a very different experience.
Absolutely.
Well, and
but we've done everything we could
that
might possibly substitute for it.
And I wrote, you know, back in when I was writing about computer-mediated interaction in college, I pointed out that, you know, one day we'll have virtual reality, we'll be able to replace all these experiences with a virtual experience. And that will serve a purpose, but it won't replace those experiences. People will always be able to tell the difference, and it'll be a significant difference between being in an actual place and being in a virtual place, no matter how accurately you portray that virtual place. It's just, that's just how it is. You're never going to, so no matter how,
I think if you start manipulating the brain directly, you might eventually be able to.
No, I don't think so. Well,
really, you don't think if you could mimic the electrical signals that produce the exact same sensations?
The problem with that is, now, you're right, that's closer. I mean, and that's not anything I was talking about. I was talking about virtual realities.
Yeah.
In terms of getting back to the implant thing and whatever, and manipulating impulses directly, there's the problem with that I see is that you're going to know you're not there. You're going to know that, okay, let's say that the experience is that you're at a play.
Right? All right.
And you're enjoying this play, and the technology can convince you through direct interaction that you are there. I mean, there's no sense that you're not there, except that you know you're not there.
Okay. So recreationally, we can't ever do that. But if I drug you, and then I manipulate your brain impulses so that you feel like you're lying on the floor and you get up and shit like that, then we're good, right?
Well, I mean, even in my novels, I say that can be very effective even without that direct whatever. I mean, there might be a little something in the back of your mind thinking, gosh, something about this doesn't feel right. But,
and we're talking about perfecting a mimic of brain signals,
yeah,
so it's
right.
an ideal already.
And in my first novel, they even did have to use drugs to really make it work.
Yeah.
So yes, but like I said, recreationally,
if you know it, it'll never be the same.
Well, and the reason it won't be the same is because you'll know that you're experiencing it just like as if you were there, but nobody will be experiencing you really because you weren't really there.
Yeah.
And that will matter to you, and it'll be different.
And I think to a certain degree, you'll believe, you'll convince yourself. I mean, you'll think it feels different, like, because you'll know.
Well, yes, exactly.
So you'll be like, I can tell.
Well, and I'm not saying it won't be a positive experience. What I'm saying is every once in a while, you're really going to want to go.
Yeah.
And then what'll happen is even the very tiny subtle differences between the two experiences will become amplified.
Although, there is an exception to all of this. If it starts very, very early in life, if that becomes your norm,
well, see, and the reason I
so you need to have a cultural appreciation for real life experience. I think
no, because the thing is, this is part of how human beings work. That could what you're talking about from my perspective is, let's say that it happens really early in life. And you don't have a cult, as you say, a cultural appreciation for real life experiences. Yes, you can have a whole generation of kids who don't go to plays because they've never been to a play and they really don't know that they're missing out on anything. But then then there's something about that generation of kids that there's going to be problems with that generation of kids.
Well, yeah.
Because there's something that's going to be stunted there, and there's going to be a consequence to that that any culture is going to think is undesirable.
Oh.
To the extent where if that condition is treated, whether they change the child's behavior in relation to this technology or not, the child will eventually, or the person will eventually, figure out themselves that that has to be part of their recovery, and they will begin appreciating real place.
Now, see, I think you're making a jump there. I believe something goes wrong in that generation. It's undesirable, but the ability of the people and the society as a whole to be able to recognize it and take the steps, those specific steps to alleviate it, is not guaranteed.
No, it isn't guaranteed, but it's going to take that culture in a direction.
A different direction. It may not be. It may not lead you back to the same road.
It'll be a bad direction.
I agree. I didn't say it was a good thing.
Well, what I'm saying is that either they'll figure out this is a problem and correct it, or they won't, and eventually there won't be anything to correct.
I think that's definitely possible.
So,
but we are talking about us. So.
No, I realize that. So, but what that's what makes me think that it actually won't even happen that way. That there will always be, you know, the kids' parents will appreciate going to plays. They'll take their kid to a play, the kid will immediately see how different it is. Because as I said, there will always be, even feeding it into your brain directly, since it's not the exact same experience.
Yeah.
Because you're not really there, and you know you're not really there. Any subtle difference, and there will be some, will just be that much more amplified, and you'll appreciate, like right now, we might not be able to appreciate the subtle differences because we don't notice them. We take them for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't take them for granted if they're amplified by the fact that this is the same in every respect except these three subtle differences.
Mm-hmm.
And now these three subtle differences blare out at you, and you might decide, these are really important to me. I never want to see a play that way again. I want to see a play when I'm really there.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's always going to be the case, so that humanity will always, unless it gets really dysfunctional. And it could get really dysfunctional. Yes, that's true. But unless it gets really dysfunctional, it'll always be the case that people want to go to real plays and have real experiences and have real face-to-face interaction with people. Doing it online or with someone plugged in or whatever will be good sometimes, but not
enough. I don't know, because we already have many, many, many people, including some going back generations in families, who don't like plays and never want to go to plays.
No, I know, but someone will. So someone will
want
to go, and someone will be making them, and someone will be making TV shows, and someone will be making film.
But there might not be a lot of people.
And it doesn't matter how many people it is. And the people who meet online are going to want to meet in person. And it won't matter if they can meet online virtually. It won't matter if they can have sexual relationship by plugging these things into the back of their heads, there's still going to be some value to actually, truly being in one another's presence.
I believe that there is somebody who will feel that way. There will always be somebody.
But you think...
I don't think necessarily everybody.
Well, no, I know it won't be everybody. I think it'll be...
I don't even necessarily think most people.
Well, I think it'll be most people.
I think it will depend on the
I think it'll always be a small number of people who say, okay, this works for me, and I'm good with this. I think there's always going to be... Well, and if for plays, it might not be most people, but I think it'll be enough people that people can make a living making plays and being in them. I think that'll always be true. I think people...
people can barely make a living being in plays now.
Well, there's going to come a point where, as it declines, it'll stop declining. And it'll be, okay, well, this is the little sort of nugget of our niche, and it's not going to change now. I truly believe that.
All right, folks. We are so out of time, but I feel like this is incredibly appropriate. William aggressively pontificates on the future literally the day before the world ends. Seems incredibly appropriate to me.
Yes.
So, that's it. We won't have any more podcasts because the world is over. If, on the off chance, the Mayans were wrong, stupid Mayans, we'll be back next week with an actual relatively live episode.
And you should go ahead and interact on the blog about everything.
Absolutely.
You've heard.
Seriously, when the world is ending, like, get on there and be like, ah, fire, oh, bad, all that stuff. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and write the hat just in case there's stuff to talk about later.
Yeah.
themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. So enjoy that, and we will talk to you after the world's over. Okay, bye. You really think the world's gonna end?
No.
Okay.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.